Wednesday, January 12th. The presidential spotlight is powerful, but is it too little too late? We start here.
We call on Congress to get done what history will judge.
President Biden gives a major speech on voting rights, but not all of his colleagues are impressed.
Biden supporters in large numbers protested this event because they are furious with him.
Did the message in Atlanta break through to Washington? We're going to need a better mask.
Neither person is wearing a mask. No mask in this situation. It's 15 minutes.
With Omicron now making up 98% of COVID cases in this country, what else can you do to protect yourself? And Britney Spears says she felt abandoned by family, but her sister says, I tried.
What has caused this rift between you?
Nothing has happened to that love. That love is still there, 100%.
Juju Chang has got the exclusive interview with Jamie Lynn Spears. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
The first year of a presidency tells you a lot. You might remember when President Trump won in 2016, some moderates said, hey, you know, if he really wants to govern as this non-traditional party guy, he might pass a big bipartisan infrastructure bill before he does anything else.
I could have started with infrastructure. I actually wanted to save the easy one for the one down the road.
Instead, in 2017, Trump's signature legislation was a series of huge tax cuts.
What economists say is the most significant investment in roads, bridges, airports, power lines, high-speed internet in a generation.
Well, as President Biden took office, he did decide to focus on infrastructure. He even got Republicans on board to support it. And looking back, we can see how much unrelenting tenacity and focus that required.
History has never been kind to those who've sided with voter suppression over voters' rights.
Biden has talked about what he calls threats to democracy, voter suppression, but legislatively, we have not seen nearly the same effort on those items. Well, that was supposed to change yesterday as President Biden flew to Atlanta, Georgia.
Thank you.
ABC's chief White House correspondent Cecilia Vega is there in Atlanta after a big speech. Cecilia, we were told to keep an eye not just on what the president said about voting rights, but what he would say about how those changes could be implemented. What did you notice there?
Well, these were really full-throated, very fiery remarks, Brad. Look, he called this a defining moment in history. He is demanding that the Senate pass voting rights legislation.
We call on Congress to get done what history will judge.
He said, look, I have been having quiet conversations behind the scenes with members of Congress for the last 2 months. He slammed the podium. He said,
I'm tired of being quiet.
19 states have passed restrictive voting laws in the wake of former President Trump's lies about a stolen election. They're taking aim at things like mail-in voting. And President Biden is politically right now making the case that this is threatening democracy, that democracy as we know it in states like Georgia here, the heart of the civil rights movement in Atlanta, that it is under attack.
Jim Crow 2.0 is about two insidious things, voter suppression and election subversion.
And that voters, particularly black, brown, and poor, disenfranchised voters, are the ones who are going to pay the price for it. So the president is saying the clock is ticking. The Senate has to do something.
What was the reaction like there on the ground? Because we keep talking about how Republicans are feeling about these voting rights bills. They say they're not necessary. They say they infringe on states' rights to run their election. Are Democrats unified over whether this is a priority?
Brad, the reality is there were a lot of Democrats who weren't even at that event for me to even give you a straight answer to survey the crowd. Look, Democrats, voting rights advocates, Biden supporters in large numbers protested this event because they are furious with him.
Keep in mind, he gave a passionate speech in Philadelphia in July, but then we didn't hear anything from him about voting rights for literally 6 months. So he can't just do the speech and call it a day. He's got to do the speech and then he's got to follow it up with actions.
They wanted to see him doing more on this, sounding the alarm louder, more forcefully, well before now.
In people's faces, up on the Hill, even in their own states. Like, go to West Virginia, go to Arizona, right?
Some voting rights activists that I spoke with flat out told me, and these are supporters of this president, flat out told me that he should have stayed in Washington and given this message directly to Senators Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, that this was the wrong audience to come down to Georgia and make the case to protect voting rights. Folks are mad at him.
There could be no infrastructure, as the president was pushing for it, if there is no democracy, if there is no voting rights legislation. That is what they argue.
This was essentially Biden responding to those groups who have been explicitly asking him to be more, to be stronger on issues of voting rights.
I make this announcement with careful deliberation, recognizing the fundamental right to vote is a right from which all other rights flow.
So then I guess the last question is all of that enough? All these strong words, passionate words, enough to change the filibuster? Like, that's what you have to change first, right? Is change the rules about the filibuster to pass one of these bills.
Well, look, the president said outright he wants to make that change, carve out in a special case a rule for the filibuster in this case as it relates to voting rights.
And if that bare minimum is blocked, we have no option but to change the Senate rules, including getting rid of the filibuster for this.
But look, he doesn't have the votes. That's the reality at the end of the day. The president can say all he wants, but I don't know that this speech is going to change minds of hardliners like Joe Manchin, who have said he doesn't want to change the rules even for voting rights because something like voting rights is so important, he thinks it should be done with bipartisan support. And the reality is he doesn't have the votes.
And Joe Manchin's thinking essentially is, what, you think Republicans are going to take power and they're going to go, oh, well, the Democrats just made the filibuster carve out about voting rights, so we're not going to change the rules? He thinks everyone should kind of agree on what they are, not just for certain issues. However, that's left a lot of Democrats, like you said, Cecilia, saying, President Biden, did you spend all your energy on bridges and roads instead of democracy and votes so far in your first term? Cecilia, in Atlanta there. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Yesterday, Dr. Anthony Fauci and CDC Director Dr. Rochelle Walensky testified in front of Congress. Things between Fauci and Senator Rand Paul got heated.
Everything that I've said has been in support of the CDC guidelines. Wear a mask, get boosted.
And you've advocated to make it coercive.
What was probably more interesting than that was just looking at Fauci and Walensky as they came into the room, because they were wearing a type of mask you've probably seen before, an N95 mask. Kind of looks like it's been made out of the same stuff as a surgical mask. It's only thicker and fits tighter over your face. Well, right before they appeared in those masks, the Washington Post reported that the CDC is getting close to saying officially, if you can get an N95, that is really the one you should be wearing amid this surge. ABC News has not confirmed this move, and lawmakers did not ask Dr. Walensky if she would make that recommendation, but it would fit in line with what doctors have been saying for a while, and particularly since the Omicron variant came to town, that these N95 masks are just way, way better at keeping you and those around you protected. So, no hospitalization numbers today, no graphs over time. I just want to flesh out this idea really quick with Sony Salzman from the ABC News Medical Unit. Because, Sony, this was like one of the most useful descriptions I've had on masks throughout this pandemic. When you were describing recently how much better an N95 mask is for you versus the cloth mask that someone made for me in the beginning of the pandemic, you told me you can actually extrapolate how many hours of safety it buys you.
Yeah, so, you know, Brad, these are estimates that were put together by a group called ACGIH, and effectively, we've known since the beginning of the pandemic that there's a hierarchy of masks, right? N95s offer the most filtration, you know, surgical masks, second most, cloth masks, third most. Now, if you want a good test of if you have a good cloth mask, it should be multiple layers, and you could check that by holding it up to the light and seeing if a lot of light is coming through the mask. It's a good rough estimate to see if you have a decent cloth mask. Now, that being said, there are some estimates that were put together by a group called ACGIH, and there are different scenarios. So let's assume that you have someone with COVID-19, someone without COVID-19. They're standing relatively close together. How long would it take for the virus to pass from the person with COVID to the person without COVID? Now, these rough estimates find that if neither person is wearing a mask, no mask in the situation, it's 15 minutes, roughly speaking. If both people are wearing one of those cloth masks, 27 minutes, half an hour, something like that. If both people are wearing a surgical mask, those blue surgical masks that we're also familiar with, an hour. Now, if both people are wearing a fitted N95 mask, That goes up to 25 hours. So,
oh God, like 25 hours is way different than half an hour or 1 hour.
It is. It absolutely is. Now, N95 masks are designed for healthcare workers.
Do you think you have it positioned properly? Mm-hmm. Okay. So once it's positioned properly, then we'll do what's called a seal check.
In fact, when healthcare workers wear them, they are actually fit tested. So there's this whole procedure to make sure that the mask fits perfectly on your face.
So breathe in and blow it out again. So did you feel any air leak anywhere around the ceiling surfaces? Okay, so that's good.
Now, this is the big caveat when it comes to masks. We know that an N95 mask does a better job filtering those respiratory particles. But at the same time, if it doesn't fit you, it's not helping you. So that's the big caveat here. Yes, they work better, but if they fit, if you have a surgical mask, a cloth mask you really love, it's really good, and it fits you and it's comfy and you wear it all the time, that's also a good option.
But like the leakage, like you're saying, just exponentially different when it comes to these N95 masks. By the way, KN95, KN94 masks, if I'm looking on Amazon, are those essentially the same thing?
Yeah, you know, they are essentially the same thing. So the KN95s, those are N95s that are approved in other countries. They haven't been approved by the FDA here, but, you know, they are those high quality masks that, that you know, should give you the same effect.
Okay, so then in addition to, you know, you just gave me these numbers and these minutes, which I think are super, like, they really illustrate what we're dealing with here. How do we know that, though? Like, because my first reaction when I hear all these numbers and masks is like, ugh, another thing to buy. What was the actual process in figuring this out?
Yeah, so Brad, I think this is really crucial. The numbers that I just referenced, they're estimates that are kind of based on studies that have been done since the beginning of the pandemic. So before this Omicron surge.
Do the masks that you wear every day really stop your cough or sneeze? Florida Atlantic researchers turned out the lights to track the spread and just how well the masks work.
We've known that N95s, you know, offer the highest filtration and less so, you know, surgical and cloth masks.
Results showed droplets traveled more than 3 feet with bandanas compared to 2.5 inches with a quilted cotton mask.
And what these studies look like oftentimes is you get like a dummy and you literally kind of, you know, feed a hose into it. You put some sort of gaseous material in there. You try different masks on the dummy and see which filters the most particles.
Oh, like you create like an imitation cough mist kind of a situation.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. In an experimental setting, you wouldn't really want to work with live virus. It's pretty dangerous, but you can get a pretty good sense of how well different masks filter those types of particles.
Okay, so then if these experiments are, you know, months or even over a year old with this pandemic, are doctors recirculating them now because of Omicron, because of the CDC? I mean, why is there such an emphasis on masks right now then?
So, you know, one of the reasons that the CDC is okay with cloth masks is because they do work extraordinarily better than nothing, and it's about fit. People are comfortable with the cloth masks. You can reuse them. Right. If they fit well around your face, that can be really helpful. So, you know, it's all about finding a mask that someone will actually wear.
Yeah, the surgical masks and the KN95 mask and all that, those are meant to be disposable. You can wear them more than once, but they're meant to be disposable eventually. With those cloth masks, you can reuse them over and over, which was an especially big deal in the beginning of the pandemic when you couldn't necessarily find exactly what you were looking for. Sony Salzman, really helpful. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Brad. Happy to be here.
Next up on Start Here, Britney Spears says she was underprotected by her family, including her sister. Well, for the first time, that sister is sitting down for an interview. We're back in a bit. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority? Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. We all know there are things in life that you have to compromise on, but when it comes to your health, there should be no compromise. Don't go back to that one doctor, you know the type, like I've had this person before, that doesn't actually listen to you or who seems just in a rush to end your appointment that you spent months making. Instead, check out ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book doctors who will make you feel comfortable, listen to you, and prioritize your health. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. You can search by location, availability, and insurance, so no compromises here, because with ZocDoc, you got more options than you know. We're talking about booking appointments with tens of thousands of top-rated, patient-reviewed, credible doctors and specialists. Go to ZocDoc.com/start here and download the ZocDoc app for free, then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc, ZocDoc.com/start here. ZocDoc.com/start here. When a judge dissolved the conservatorship of Britney Spears last year, it was obviously a huge development for Britney Spears herself, but it left lots of open questions for her family. Like, how much control did her father, Jamie Spears, exert over her? How far was he willing to go to monitor her life? And if other family members had to choose between him and Britney, who would they bow to?
Why write this book now?
It was really important to me to... first off, honor my voice.
Well, this morning, in an exclusive interview, the sister of Britney Spears, Jamie Lynn Spears, is saying what she knew and when to ABC's Juju Chang, the co-anchor of Nightline, who joins us now. Juju, you did this interview earlier this week. It's premiering today on Good Morning America and Nightline later tonight. What did Jamie Lynn Spears tell you?
It was such a far-reaching conversation because it's not just one thing, it's 17 things that took place over decades. And she has lived a harrowing life alongside her sister.
I can't help the family I was born into.
And yet, in many ways, she was subjected to many of the same traumas and tragedies that her sister was.
There are different perspectives and different people who have walked through this, both painful and both good. And I don't think it's fair to just assume that only one account of it is the one that matters.
Right, because she just wrote a book of her own, and you actually just sat down with her the first time she's talked to anybody, and you really ended up talking about what led up to the conservatorship from her point of view, right? Like her history, her timeline.
Absolutely. And in many ways, her history and her timeline overlaps with Britney. So she points out the fact that, you know, she was a Nickelodeon star of Zoe 101.
Room 101, here you go.
Whoa, this is my room? Oh my God, I can see the ocean from here.
When she was 16 years old, she got pregnant.
The news that 16-year-old Jamie Lynn Spears is pregnant came as a shock to most.
I think it's awful. These little girls have almost nobody to look up to.
And that in many ways derailed her career. And she was in the midst of intense paparazzi scrutiny, like the kind of scrutiny that her sister Britney was used to getting.
You wrote, and I'm going to quote you, the entire Spears team was already caught up in my sister's PR difficulties, and everyone around me just wanted to make the issue disappear.
Yeah, I think that the easy thing for possibly them would have been like, let's just get this over with.
And her family sort of secreted her away to a cabin and isolated her from her friends under the guise of, let's not let this leak to the press.
I felt just alone again. I didn't know. I wasn't allowed to really speak to anybody else. So what was I going to do except for just suffer through it?
And this was exactly the same time as her sister, Britney, was unraveling, as she says in the book. And she was placed into conservatorship. And she says, I was 17 when that happened.
I was about to have a baby, so I didn't understand what was happening, nor was I focused on that. I was focused on the fact that I was a 17-year-old about to have a baby. I understand just as little about it then as I do now.
And that's I think what everyone wants to know is what was her involvement? What was Jamie Lynn Spears' involvement with her sister's conservatorship?
Well, I asked her point blank, Brad.
You talked in the book about the role that you were asked to play in the conservatorship, because there's some printed reports that say that you're a trustee on the conservatorship.
It's just people are so reckless with their facts. If they for once would just be factual, it'd be really beneficial for so many reasons.
And she adamantly denies that. In fact, she even provided court documents to show that she wasn't a trustee, that that was a misunderstanding.
There was no, like, me overseeing funds or something like that. And if that was, it was a misunderstanding. But either way, I took no steps to be a part of it. She asked me if I'd oversee a trust and will. And just like any sister, under any circumstance, of course. Once I realized that, like, I was going to have to step into some trustee, I was like, absolutely not. I want no part of that.
She said to me, as a child star, I've been working since I was a teenager. I know what it's like to have other people on my payroll, and I made it a point never to be that person. So I never wanted to gain any money from Britney's trust.
But if you're saying that this is a young woman who at one point has been, like, ferried away to a cabin where she didn't even know where she was in the world, I mean, that sounds like, you know, some of the things that Britney Spears has described. It's this feeling of not having control of where you are. So I'm wondering, what did Jamie Lynn Spears think of the conservatorship? And did she try to help Britney Spears get out of it?
I think in so many ways, it was the way she was raised, in the same way that her sister was raised.
What has caused this rift between you?
Oh, nothing has happened to that love. That love is still there, 100%. I love my sister.
Jamie Lynn is, in many ways, has tried to be Switzerland over the years, but it's not like she's fully in support of her parents or the conservatorship.
I've always been my sister's biggest supporter. So when she needed help, I set up ways to do so, went out of my way to make sure that she had the contact she needed to possibly go ahead and in this conservatorship.
She revealed for the first time that she sent lawyers to Britney in an effort to help her get out of the conservatorship, but that Britney didn't follow up with those lawyers.
I did take the steps to help, but how many times can I take the steps without, she has to walk through the door.
And that's the sensitive thing with this whole conservatorship case, right? Has been, you know, people under the Free Britney hashtag have basically said, there's no Switzerland. Either you're on the side of the righteous person who's been subjugated for years, or you're not. So that gets even more complicated, I'd imagine, as you talk about Britney Spears' mental health, right? Because that's a sensitive thing in any family, how you describe somebody to strangers. It's even more intense when mental health in this scenario has meant, in some cases, control of your life can be stripped away.
Totally. And there's two things I will say about that. One is Jamie Lynn was incredibly brave enough to talk about her own mental health struggles. She realized that she had been struggling with anxiety and depression and OCD. She went into great detail about all these diagnoses.
My panic attacks were all consuming, where I'm counting, I'm touching the doorknob 7 times. I've got to, you know, it was consuming my life to the point where it physically was taking over me. And I went and finally spoke to a therapist.
And as the years continued, you know, there was a sense that, as Britney says, she lied and said everything was okay. And what Jamie Lynn says is, I was far removed. I was raising children in Louisiana. I wasn't, you know, in tune with what was going on with Britney. But more importantly, she says, I'm just as confused now about the conservatorship as Britney was.
I've only ever loved and supported her and done what's right by her. And she knows that. So I don't know why we're in this position right now.
It's so interesting because over the years, Britney Spears was this kind of, you know, celebrity, this gossip, source of gossip, when in the last couple of years, she's really been the protagonist of what her supporters have described as this tragic story. So then it's interesting to hear the people around her sort of trying to describe their place in the world. It can get much more complicated than a simple good guy, bad guy. Jamie Lynn Spears certainly dealing with that right now. Juju Chang, fascinating interview on Good Morning America right now. A lot more on Nightline later tonight. Thanks, Juju.
Oh, my pleasure.
We're going to step away again real quick. When we come back, calling someone a rat is no longer an insult in this country. One last thing is next.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Libsyn Ads. Go to libsynads.com now. That's LIBSYNads.com.
And one last thing. Recently, a humanitarian hero in Cambodia passed away. His name was Magawa, and he spent years putting his life on the line finding landmines left over from years of war. He's also a rat.
Hero rats, sniffing out landmines.
That's right, Magawa is part of a program called Hero Rats, in which giant pouched rats are trained to use their noses to locate landmines.
To get a reliable mapping of where exactly landmines are still threatening local communities along the Thai-Cambodian border.
Magawa found over 100 mines in his lifetime, becoming the most successful rat in the program's history and earning real awards for his efforts.
This is the very first time in our 77-year history of honoring animals that we will have presented a medal to a rat.
He retired in 2020 and passed away peacefully in retirement at the age of 8. It's part of a long history of animals doing incredible things on behalf of armed forces. Elephants are still used in some parts of the world in wartime. Russia has been known to train dolphins and beluga whales to hunt for underwater mines. Which brings up a question: is there a growing technology gap between the U.S. and other nations in terms of their animal training?
Surprisingly, it doesn't take the fish a long time to learn how to drive the vehicle.
Well, in Israel this week, scientists announced they taught goldfish to drive a car. That's right. They put them in a tank on top of a little vehicle, and they gave them food pellets whenever they would bump their noses against the wall closest to this visual target on the other side of the room. The robotic car moves forward towards the target when they do it.
They're very confused at first. They don't know what's going on, but they're very quick to realize that there's a correlation between their movement and the movement of the machine that they're in.
Within days, these fish are driving a vehicle down a street outdoors. The crazy thing here is, Israel's not even the first to try this experiment. Dutch fish have been doing this for nearly a decade, meaning if there is a fish race underway, the U.S. has already let the big one get away. Something about that little rat in Cambodia is so noble to me. He's literally discovered 100 landmines. He's saved lives, undoubtedly. They gave him a little medal to wear around his neck. We'll miss you, Magawa. Start here tomorrow. Tap that follow button for new episodes every day. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.